What may potentially be PBS and NPR's loss could be NASA's gain. Let's get an accounting with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Derek, on the face of it, it looks like the Trump administration will be devoting slightly more money to NASA in the coming fiscal year.
You're right, Dave. That is the proposal that comes from the current administration for NASA's budget for 2019, another $370 million above last year's budget is what's being recommended. And within those recommendations, there are certain changes to programs that already exist.
So this is not a carte blanche endorsement of NASA's priorities to date.
Oh, far, far from that, in fact. This proposed budget eliminates funding for International Space Station by 2025. That's a $100 billion research facility that's been built and maintained in low Earth orbit for the last 10 years or so.
So NASA lobbied for funding for certain aspects of its program. Who then made the decision about what merited money or not?
Congress is the one that approves the budget. NASA may make recommendations, suggestions, things of that sort, but NASA doesn't control how much it gets from the United States government or is allotted in the budget. So NASA is at the mercy of what Congress decides to do, even though Congress will be as well informed as possible. It's still Congress's decision what it wants to fund, or in this case, in a number of instances of programs in NASA, defund. Case in point, other than International Space Station, there's also the Office of Education, which has done such a tremendous job to encourage students at every grade level to pursue STEM education and careers. Well, the proposal in this budget is to cut the funds for the Office of Education altogether.
Let's then stress that this is indeed in the proposal stage.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. But we should keep our eye on this because it can change the nature of the American national space effort in very large ways. Simply because if we were to give up International Space Station, this nation loses the biggest technological symbol of our prowess that we have and gives up that ground in space to all of the other national players that are putting together or planning space stations.
Say birthday anniversary greetings to one Copernicus, and as visionary as he may have been, I don't even think he could have anticipated International Space Station.
545 years ago when Copernicus was born, I don't even think he knew what his fate was going to be, going down in history as one of the leading scientists, astronomers in history. His work to help us understand how the solar system is actually put together and constructed certainly was controversial at that time. He preceded Galileo and set out this idea that it's the sun that stands at the center of the solar system and everything goes around that. And he had to tread very carefully to make sure that it was understood that it was simply a suggestion, a thought exercise, if you will, so that there would be no offense against the Catholic Church and the Bible at that time. Galileo certainly helps to cement this understanding through his first observations of the planet Jupiter in 1610, where he sees the moons of Jupiter orbiting around the planet and can surmise immediately that this is the direct analogy for the overall structure of the solar system, with the sun at the center and the Earth merely a player among the other planets in orbit around the sun.
Half a millennia ago, was astronomy still primarily swayed by the tenets of astrology?
No doubt. At that time, astrology still held command over the understanding by the vast population of the workings of the heavens. There's no question about that. It took some time for astronomy to begin to overtake astrology and to put it in its proper place. Galileo, again, was in the forefront of establishing a method through which theories could be set up for testing and reviewed, whereas astrology stayed where it was, or it didn't do any of that at all, but simply relied on the human interpretations of planetary positions at the time someone is born, and it stays there essentially today.
Every human can do his or her own interpretations by stepping out of doors, and this week what's available to be seen in the night sky.
If I were someone who wanted to place my fate among the planet side, step outside in the early morning hours, the pre-dawn sky, 6 a.m., looking over to the east-southeastern sky at that time, I can easily identify three bright planets of our solar system. Closest to the horizon and closest to east is Saturn, sort of dimly glowing with a slightly yellowish color. If I move up toward the south on a diagonal up to the right, I'll come to a smaller but brighter reddish object, which would be Mars, of course. And if I continue on that diagonal line up, I come to the brightest object in the southeastern sky in that time, which is Jupiter, the biggest planet of our solar system. You can't miss those three. But if that's too early in the morning, hang around until evening, just after sunset, 6 p.m., low on the western horizon, you'll find the brilliant planet Venus. It's low on the horizon. Over the next several weeks, it's going to shrink in size as it moves away from the sun and its orbit around the sun. Its brightness will diminish, but you can catch it now if you find a spot that has a clear view of the west-southwestern horizon.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight.